Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. We have four cases for oral argument this morning. We have two on the 9 o'clock docket, and as you all have been informed, we switched case number two with case number one. So we'll be hearing case number two first, Harper v. State, cause number 214-189-CR. If the clerk will please advise who's arguing today. Thank you. All right, Mr. Henderson.
I'm Richard Henderson. I represent Thomas Lester Harper, the appellant in the case. I'm not going to go into a long detail of the facts. We'd probably use all of our time if we did. It's a very disturbing set of facts. There were a number of events that are in the record that led to Thomas Harper traveling up Collins Street, close to 100 miles per hour. The video from the Valero is quite compelling. Harper's two young children were strapped into car seats, and on the video you see a very violent collision. Mr. Harper never braked, and he rear-ends a Dodge Dakota being driven by a veteran named Najee Nasir, and it apparently killed Mr. Nasir almost instantly. A lot of people come running out, trying to help, trying to see what's going on. There's a person named Clarence Robinson, who is acting as a good Samaritan, appears to be trying to help unstrap the children out of the car seat. And Mr. Harper pulls out a gun and shoots the good Samaritan one time in the temple, and he drops dead to the ground. It's quite an emotional case, but we still must put the motion aside and follow the law. There are many other bizarre facts in the records in our briefs, and I'll leave that for the court. Mr. Harper did take the stand in the case and admitted the conduct as required by Texas Code of Criminal Procedure, Texas Penal Code 922. But he also testified that he shot because he believed that in his mind, it was time he needed to protect his children. And there's a little bit of a conflict that I think has worked out in a case called Juarez, which I've cited in the brief, between Section 203. The defense has the burden to show the existence of a defense. In Juarez, they pretty much said, no matter how weak it is, unimpeached, or contradicted, if you raise it in the evidence, you get a charge on necessity. Here, it was raised by the evidence. The defense very clearly requested the jury instruction on necessity, and the court denied it. And we believe that becomes fundamental error under Almanza, and I don't think the court has any choice but to reverse the case. I think once you address that first issue, our other two issues kind of fall by the wayside, become moot. We did raise and briefed the concept of what we used to call manslaughter with sudden passion, which follows some of the same law as raising the concept of necessity. The second group of, I've grouped together for argument and for briefing, was conduct by the state during the course of the trial. And I would have to say, I think if the court looks at the record, this was not the best day for the legal profession, the way this trial was conducted. I think the sniping that started between the defense and the state, things got personal. If you slog through that record, you'll see that I think both sides lost a little bit of their dignity in the course of the trial because of this very difficult set of facts. That said, I think it was incumbent upon the trial judge to step in and say, look, everybody needs to stop and conduct themselves in a more professional manner. And when it didn't happen, I think the trial court had the duty to step in and declare a mistrial. Some of the things that I have cited in the brief, are most of which happened during the course of the cross-examination, the state's attorney said things, so You weren't being controlled by an alien force, were you? Wasn't the same alien force, was it, that was shooting marijuana in your head, was it? So you realized when your feet hit the pavement right next to the body, I might add, you walked gingerly around so you wouldn't step in the blood and brains and vomit out there. Did it strike you, oh my God, I've killed this man? Did the surroundings include the still warm body of a young man who 5 minutes earlier had been alive and well and laughing and helpful and filled with good intentions? Did the surroundings include his body? Let's talk about an execution. Here's an execution: when you put a gun in someone's face and you pull the trigger and you blow their brains out through their nostrils. And we can't bore a hole in your head or shoot a hole in your head so that your intent pours out. You purposely killed Clarence Robinson. You purposely killed a young man who served his country and survived where there's murder and a maniac around every corner of the road, when you purposely and callously and irresponsibly wiped them off the face of the earth. Questions like, how stupid do you think these jurors are? And how about the rights of those two children? This was an argument, the right not to be left with a jerk like this for a father. I think this all rolls into what we call inflammatory argument, inflammatory statements. And I think would have been better if the defense team had objected every time and shut this down. But I think when it got this far out of hand, I think it was time for the judge to stand up and say, enough is enough. We can't, this is not a fair trial. Should have declared a mistrial.
Don't you think the judge could have shut it down by, if it had been asked through objection to do so, and given a curative instruction?
I think so, but I think once it gets so far, the judge just can't sit there on his hands and do nothing. When things get this far out of hand, it's time to stop it. And if the defense attorneys are not going to stand up and stop it, then the court has to stand up and stop it. Anyway, that's basically the argument that I'm making this morning. I appreciate the court switching the argument today because I do have a jury in the box in CDC-4.
All right, thank you, Mr. Henderson. Ms. Kennedy.
May it please the court. While it's true that a defense, if raised, a charge has to be given if a defense is raised, a charge doesn't have to be given unless the elements, the legal elements of that defense are met. And when we're talking about the defense of necessity, there are some extremely specific items that need to be proven. The defense's request for the necessity defense essentially engrafts upon the reasonableness prong, the reasonable, ordinary, prudent person who is high on marijuana. Well, that's not the standard. It's the reasonable, ordinary person. Would a reasonable, ordinary person who was not high think that strangers who were surrounding his car and attempting to help his screaming children were a threat to those children? And it's also important to note that in all of appellant's testimony, he claims that he doesn't know, he doesn't remember, he doesn't think so. He has no reason why he shot Clarence Robinson. He didn't know if Clarence Robinson had a weapon. He didn't know what Clarence Robinson's intentions were. Therefore, he can't prove, which is the second prong of the necessity defense, that his actions in shooting Clarence Robinson were immediately necessary to avoid a greater imminent harm. The sudden passion charge of punishment is a little bit different, and the state submits that it was appellant who caused the problem to begin with, but for his intoxication, fleeing from a previous accident, rear-ending 7 cars at a stoplight, Clarence Robinson would never have had the opportunity to try to save his children and thereby get killed by appellant. So clearly the sudden passion charge at punishment was not merited. Turning to appellant's third and fourth points of error, there's not a lot of case law on inflammatory questioning. Both appellant and the state have relied heavily on cases using the analogy of closing argument, inflammatory closing argument. However, the standard for cross-examination is fairly loose. Cross-examination is expected to be acrimonious. It is expected to be confrontational. The trial judge has wide discretion in allowing cross-examination. The defense lack of objection could have, in fact, been trial strategy. This was an personally acrimonious trial between some of the lawyers involved. The defense could easily have thought, I'm going to let this go, and they're going to be, the jury's going to be so angry at the treatment my poor client is getting on the stand that could influence them to show leniency. In any event, the weight of the evidence in this case is overwhelming. We have people from the very first hit and run through the crash, through the attempted rescue, to the appearance of police on the scene, to the trip to the hospital, all the way to the jail, to testify to appellant's obviously intoxicated demeanor. One of the witnesses said he was frothing at the mouth. The witnesses were unanimous in that he did appear to be intoxicated on something, and that he was not making any sense. Even appellant's own testimony leads to the conclusion that he was guilty of murder. He might not have been in his right mind when he did it, but he does not meet any of these standards for diminished capacity, simply because in Texas, voluntary intoxication is not a defense. And that is the crux of what appellant is arguing in terms of necessity and sudden passion, that his voluntary intoxication somehow switches or softens the legal requirements for both. If there are no questions, state will give back the rest of her time and pray for a deferment.
Thank you, Ms. Kennedy. Mr. Henderson, rebuttal.
Thank you. I think at the end of the day, if you apply the Juarez case, and no matter how weak the evidence is, if there is evidence that is produced from any source, the necessity instruction has to be given. And while there was contradictory things testified to by Mr. Harper, both in direct and also in cross, he did testify that he shot Clarence because he thought it was necessary to protect his children. Once that evidence is in, no matter how weak, no matter how contradicted or impeached, the instruction is necessary. And I would agree that cross can be fairly loose, but not this loose. This was basically out of control. Somebody needed to do something, and the trial court needs to step forward and take charge of the trial. I think also what happens many times is, I think counsel just argued, is that because there's so much overwhelming evidence of his guilt, that 44.2 of the Texas Rules of Appellate Procedure say that it would be, quote, harmless error, end quote. But that's not the test for whether you give an instruction, and we hope it's not the test for an abuse of discretion when a trial gets this far out of hand. So we're asking for reversal and remand and for a new trial.
All right, thank you, Mr. Henderson.
Thank you.
Ms. Kennedy, we appreciate your arguments and your briefing in this matter. Your case is now submitted. Thank you for coming early, and you all are excused. And we'll go ahead and call the next case. Barry Nussbaum versus Builders Bank.